We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I believe there was a time not too long ago when such a sentence could not be uttered truthfully, that there would be an evangelical who, especially an evangelical leader, who would publicly, now privately, you don't know about privately, but publicly deny the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because, of course, evangelical, by definition, would have meant someone who believes such a thing. That is the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. To not believe it, and especially to deny it in public, would have put you outside the pale of evangelicalism. Is it still true? Apparently not so. It's This Week in Pop American Christianity. Today we're going to be talking with Pastor Chris Roseboro about some blatant denials of the bodily resurrection of Christ by evangelical leaders. Pastor Chris Roseboro is a regular guest. He's pastor of Consfinger Lutheran Church in Oslo, Minnesota, and host of a daily internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Todd.
Now, you have been evaluating Easter sermons, bad Easter sermons, for about 9 years on Fighting for the Faith. Have you noticed any changes, subtle or otherwise?
Yeah, actually, especially with this year's crop, I hate to say it, but you know, we get literally hundreds, close to 1,000 different submissions from our listeners every year. And as painful as it is, we're committed to previewing every single one of them. And in this year's crop, we noticed a marked increase in people who were questioning, denying, or basically saying it didn't matter if you believed in the resurrection of Jesus or not. And it's actually kind of growing at an alarming rate. I was quite shocked at the sheer number of sermons where the pastors were talking that way, or attacking the biblical text in strange ways. I think of Andy Stanley a couple years back. He started doing this and basically saying it isn't enough anymore to say the Bible tells you so. And so you're really seeing a growing unbelief or liberalism within evangelicalism as a whole, and it's actually quite alarming.
How do you explain it? How do you explain, as I said a few moments ago, 20 years ago, you simply could not have found an evangelical leader who would publicly deny the bodily resurrection. It wouldn't have happened. Nowadays, you can. How do you explain that shift away from this into denying the central truth claim?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would think that there's going to be several factors that are playing into it, and it would be too much in this point to go through all of the different factors. But one of the major ones is that when you have kids growing up in mega churches where doctrine is so insanely thin, and what you get is a steady diet of so-called biblical principles and life tips on how to alleviate suburban life difficulties, you don't really need a risen Jesus for that, and there really isn't a high value on sound doctrine and catechesis. In fact, I would even argue that for the entire time that evangelicalism has steered into the seeker-driven direction, they have openly been hostile to doctrine and have viewed it as an obstacle to church growth. And so the logical outcome would be then, as the younger generation begins to take its, you know, place in leadership in churches like this, that that animosity towards sound doctrine and in the exclusive truth claims of Christianity would it would see further erosion. And I think that's what we're seeing, is that the younger and younger generation are saying these things. And plus, as evangelicalism has continued to attack sound doctrine and say that it's not important, I think certain leaders who've been around the track for a while, they just don't, they're not getting any of the pushback that they would have 10, 20, or 30 years ago.
So very briefly, this is a good lesson that any kind of doctrinal minimalism, any kind of reduction of these things, it will and can inevitably lead to even a denial of the thing upon which the truth claim upon which Christianity hangs.
Yes, absolutely. And so you'd say something like, you know, Rick Warren, you know, who major pioneer in the purpose-driven movement, never denied the bodily resurrection of Jesus. And yet I know churches that were inspired by him, where new leadership is coming up, that, you know, the leaders are not holding to these things. In fact, they kind of, you know, mock those who think that it's important.
What do you have for us first?
All right, we're going to cheat a little bit today. We're going to get one of the more blatant denials of the resurrection actually came from outside of the U.S. So we're going to go to Scotland, to Mayfield Salisbury Parish, and we're going to listen to the Reverend Scott McKenna. And on Easter 2, he was preaching the Gospel of John chapter 20 in Doubting Thomas. And he does something very fascinating, and we'll have to talk about how to debunk what he says, but let him say what he needs to say first.
In the night, under the cover of darkness, on the first day of the week, and behind locked doors, Jesus came and stood among his disciples. He said, "Peace be with you." He showed them his torn hands and pierced side. On that first evening of the resurrection, Thomas was not with the disciples. He was not in the room when Jesus appeared. Later, when the disciples tell him of their experience, Thomas said, "Unless I see, I will not believe." 1 week later, again, the disciples gathered under the cover of darkness in a house behind locked doors. This time, Thomas is with them. Jesus appeared in their midst with the same greeting, "Peace be with you." Jesus spoke directly to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side." Thomas said, "My Lord and my God." That evening, under the cover of darkness, Jesus appeared to his disciples. The verb used for appear is quite specific. It means an apparition, an inner vision. It is something that is experienced and seen within the consciousness, with the inner eye, in the mind, in the heart. The appearance of Jesus that night in that room in Jerusalem could not have been recorded on an iPhone. There was nothing physical to see. And the verb chosen by the writer tells us that.
A couple things here. It's interesting how there's an appeal to the original language here.
Mm-hmm.
And I am interested as to whether or not his contention that this has to do with some sort of non-literal seeing is true. But it's interesting that he tells the whole story, the point of which is that Jesus could be touched and handled, and says in the end, he couldn't be touched and handled.
Yes, that is absolute unbelief that we're dealing with here. And let's be blunt. You know, the Apostle John in the Epistle of 1 John describes fellows like Scott McKenna in the most unflattering way. He describes them as, well, little antichrists. That is the voice of the devil telling you that what the text says doesn't mean what it says. It means the exact opposite. That is not only crazy, that is absolute satanic attack against Scripture. But the other thing is that that same apostle, John, in his epistle says that no lie is of the truth. No lie is of the truth. That's one of the statements that he makes in his first epistle. And it's important to note that Scott McKenna, made a big to-do about how the word appear in the Gospel of John in this text makes it clear that this was some kind of a spiritual appearing, something that happened in your heart, not physical. And if you had an iPhone, you couldn't record it. But here's the problem. In John chapter 20, the word appear doesn't appear. In fact, both John and Luke use a very interesting phrase to describe Jesus' appearance to the disciples on that very first Easter Sunday. And I'll read from the Gospel of John first. In John chapter 20, verse 19, on the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being locked where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them. And the Greek verb is histemi, which means to stand. It doesn't say that Jesus appeared. It says that he came and he stood. And what's interesting is that the following week, 8 days later, Thomas now being in the room, it's the same exact statement that Jesus came and stood. Luke uses that exact same phrase, but what's fascinating about it is that that's not the first time this type of phraseology has been used regarding God, shall we say. And that is go all the way back into the Old Testament, into 1 Samuel, and the calling of Samuel the prophet when he was a young boy, when he was sleeping in the tabernacle, no joke, in the Holy of Holies, and he thought that Eli, the high priest, was calling him when it was the Lord calling him. And eventually Eli says, when you hear the voice, you know, say, you know, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. And then in 1 Samuel 3:10, it says, and then Yahweh came and stood, calling as at the other time, Samuel, Samuel. And so what's fascinating is that not only does the word appear not appear in John chapter 20, it doesn't appear in Luke 24. This is not exegesis he's engaging in, but the phrase that is used by John and Luke actually harkens back to the Old Testament, and it comports perfectly with this idea that Christ was physically in the room, came and stood among them, and so his point is moot. It's not even valid, and he's shown to actually be speaking falsehoods in support of his belief that Jesus didn't rise bodily from the grave.
So that phrase that you quoted from the Apostle John, no truth or no lies of the truth, what's your point here? You're simply saying he is not telling the truth, therefore he's not telling the truth.
Yeah, he's straight up lying, and what he's saying is not biblical doctrine at all. And Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And those who are his disciples, who are discipling people, would be speaking the truth about Jesus. And so over and again, all of the apostles, all of the gospels, and the apostle Paul make emphatic statements that Jesus rose bodily from the grave. That's the whole point of their narratives. And what this man is doing from the pulpit is not inculcating faith in Christ. He is destroying people's faith and taking Jesus away from them by taking the bodily resurrection away from them.
With only a minute, I believe that the fellow that we heard is kind of a liberal theologian there in Scotland, and we're going to hear some more on the other side of the break from evangelicals. Are we going to notice some similarity?
Oh yeah, the birds of a feather. Yeah, we'll have a little two man wolf pack, if you would. But yes, well, we're going to hear the same kind of stuff on the other side of the break.
Pastor Chris Roseborough is our guest. It's This Week in Pop American Christianity. Today, some blatant denials of the bodily resurrection of Jesus by evangelical leaders. Chris is pastor of Kongsvinger Lutheran Church in Oslo, Minnesota, and hosts the daily internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is called Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. You won't find any shifty exegesis or flimsy interpretation in there. It's a solid interpretation of the last chapter of the book of Proverbs with Christ as its center. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. More from This Week in Pop American Christianity and Pastor Chris Roseborough after the break.
We like our crosses full and our tombs empty. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How was school today, kids?
Crazy! Hector's charioteer got hit by a stone, and his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet.
Sounds like Patroclus was being hot-tempered, rude, and quarrelsome again.
He always is. Dad, what's for supper?
I don't know yet. Supper is such a problem.
If it's a problem, you can use the scientific method to figure it out.
Problem? We want supper. Hypothesis? I think Dad will make tacos.
Actually, I was thinking about spaghetti.
Tacos or spaghetti?
False dichotomy.
Is this the after-school conversation of your dreams? Registration is now open for the 2018-19 school year at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area.
Hey, Dad, how did my violin practice sound?
Kiddo, it sounded epic.
Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org. school.stpaulhamel.org.
When you hear parents say, religion is something that's going to be an obstacle for my child's success, I think it's quite the opposite. And I think there's quite a bit of data to show that.
The indulgence was viewed as a way to buy forgiveness. Completely doing away with the merits of Christ. If the Roman Catholic Church is right, there is no point in the cross of Jesus Christ.
We have to, as a church body nationally, learn that there are risks worth taking and that some of this cultural Germanness that we've inherited is not biblical stewardship.
Once you buy into enthusiasm, you've opened yourself up, and I hate to say it this way, but you've opened yourself up to pure doctrines of demons.
Half hour from now, we're going to be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Those soundbites will play in their entirety for you to listen to. You get to make up your mind, and then you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can vote via Twitter at IssuesETC or at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Your chance also to win the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pin, bumper sticker, and notepad. It goes to the listener with the best vote when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. In the meantime, it's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough, talking about some evangelical leaders openly denying the bodily resurrection of Christ. Where do we go next, Chris?
Okay, we're heading to Bothell, Washington, and this is where we're going to stay for the rest of the program. And we're going to listen to a fellow by the name of Ryan Meeks. And Ryan Meeks is a fellow who was kind of in the first wave of the seeker-driven evangelical movement. And he ended up, let's just say, you know, this is phase two of his life within, you know, evangelicalism. And in his Easter sermon, he literally sets up this interesting dichotomy between love and what can only be described as, resurrection reductionism is kind of what he's describing, but I'll let him explain.
But I did a little video talking about, hey, I'm going to talk about Easter. And, you know, I spent 10 years of my life as an evangelical megachurch pastor saying, you know, get all your friends here so I can convince them to believe in a propositional truth claim about history that they need to believe in their heads. Like, this is the most important thing. They got to believe this thing. And I asked the question in the video, is that what it really is ultimately about? I mean, that nagging question in my head wouldn't leave me alone over time until eventually that idea kind of crumbled for me. Is this just really the Christian holiday where Christians get together and say, we're right, don't forget, you know? Is it the moment when we all say, you know what, thank goodness we're in, and everyone's welcome to come convert and embrace our worldview and make sure that they're on our team because our God's the best, our way is the best, and if you don't, there's actually a threat, which these days gets played down a lot because it's not quite as exciting and inviting to folks when you say, God loves you. Unless you don't love him back, then he's going to kill you, which is a little bit more like a flashback to junior high, right? Oh my God, I love him so much. He doesn't like me. Screw him, right? Is that God? Is that God? Because there is, throw a rock, you will find a church that is preaching a message of that, of God's great love, and you must believe this particular thing about a historical propositional truth claim. And if you don't, there is no bigger threat that I've ever heard besides eternal conscious torment that awaits those who are the unbelievers. And I want to challenge this idea that everything about my life and your life comes down to what you believe in your mind about a supposed event 2,000 years ago that you did not experience, cannot verify, and cannot disprove. The danger of reducing the Easter story to that is that if Easter is all about the content of your mind, then living in love becomes a detail instead of the point. And what do we say around here? Life is a gift, and love is the point. So when the story gets reduced to the content of your mind, then living in love is like something that is just a detail.
Okay, how would you respond to that, Chris?
So we're going to know there's a few kind of blatant errors that he's engaging in. And one of them is he does not have a proper understanding of what saving faith is. He was actually describing what theologians would call demon faith. And let me explain. When we talk about saving faith, there's kind of three primary ingredients that would make up saving faith. Notitia, fiducia, assensus and fiducia. These are kind of the Latin phrases, but notitia would be the basic knowledge of the facts that we're describing. So you can say the facts themselves may be laid out in something succinctly like the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed. Assensus is that says, yes, these facts are historically true. And it's important to note that somebody who just merely gives mental assent to a set of historical claims, that does not actually equal saving faith. That's demon faith. And that's what he was describing there. So he was basically saying that evangelicals have this idea that mental assent to these historic propositional truth claims is somehow everything hangs on that. And the reality is that's not true. Fiducia is the last piece of this. And fiducia basically requires that where we say that those things happened, that Jesus did those things in history for me and for my salvation. And that constitutes saving faith, and that fiducia element of it is a gift actually given by God himself. We can't muster that within ourselves. That is given to us as a gift, and I would point people to Ephesians 2, 8, 9. And so what he said is actually false. So in a sense, he's built an inaccurate description of this idea and then somehow pitted this false idea of, you know, mental assent to historical propositional truth claims, described it in terms that we're going to reduce everything down and say this is the most important thing, and then pitted it against sanctification and love. And so, I mean, this is quite deceitful on his part. And he's taking the role of a scoffer rather than somebody who's a careful exegete or somebody who is carefully laying out what the truth would be.
The real tragedy here is he's gone from frying pan to fire, because he says 10 years as a megachurch pastor, he thought that people should be brought to church on Easter in order to be convinced of some sort of mere fact of history. And so there's the frying pan. He actually believed that, when he apparently did believe in the resurrection at some point in the past, that it was just this kind of cold knowledge, rather than people ought to be brought to church on Easter to hear that what Christ had done in his death and resurrection, he had done as their substitute, as the atoning sacrifice. That's all missing there. And then, of course, the fire is, well, my answer is, I'm just going to deny the resurrection is verifiable, therefore it probably didn't happen, and you probably don't have to believe it.
Yeah, that really is the tragedy of it. And then, you know, the question is that why would anyone want to get up on a Sunday morning and go to a place called a church if Jesus didn't rise from the grave? I mean, what does this religion turn into without the bodily, you know, death and resurrection of Christ? I have better things to do with my time if Jesus didn't rise from the grave, you know.
Should we also note, before we move to the next one, that when you start pulling on the threads of this sweater, it comes apart really quickly. He was pretty clear that he didn't believe in hell.
Yeah, and he got the direction backwards on that one. And so this is a classic kind of, I hate to say this, this is the kind of argument that you get from atheists on YouTube, who are not exactly the brightest atheists in the bunch. I'm just saying. But what you end up doing is that the direction's all wrong. So you're saying if I don't believe in Jesus that he's going to send me to hell, what kind of, you know, how can that be love? Yeah, see, no, here's the issue. That scripture's really clear. We are all already dead in trespasses and sins, and we're all already born under the condemnation of God. Hell is our destination, period, unless God intervenes. And so the idea here is that God is basically saying, you don't have to get what you deserve. Christ has died in your place. Totally different thing altogether. They make, you know, so this depiction of Jesus is some kind of like petty junior high, you know, schoolgirl, you know, if you don't love me, well, I hate you, you know, kind of thing. That's totally a misrepresentation. That's not what scripture says at all.
What's next from Ryan Meeks?
So this is now going to get more interesting. Not only is he going to deny that hell exists, we're actually going to hear him deny that Jesus is coming back, and you're going to hear kind of the cash out on this sermon where he denies the resurrection of Jesus. And basically, you know, what does Christianity get reduced to? Well, I'll let him explain.
The disciples were in shock and anger and fear. A boulder had been rolled across a just world that they believed was just at hand. It was coming soon. And it seemed like that world was never going to come now. And it won't until we build it. It's up to us. Guys, it's been 2,000 years. Every generation is like, we're in the end times. Every generation that's ever said that has been wrong. Can we at least, some of you are like, he's definitely coming back. Fine. How about we clean up the joint anyway, and then when he comes back, we're like, we cleaned it. That's what I'm saying. I don't care what you believe. Believe whatever you want. The question is, what are your beliefs motivating in you? What grows out of those beliefs? Hey, let me read this quote. Robert Swan says this: the greatest threat to our planet is the belief that someone else will save it. This Easter, I beg you, let go of the fantasy that someone else is coming to rescue us. Follow Gandhi and be the change. Follow Jesus and be the light of the world that he says you are. Faith, having faith, isn't about believe the preposterous. That's what is faith. That's insane. Faith is embodied trust in a better world that we might not actually see come to fruition. That's faith. In spite of the uphill climb, I will work for that reality. Susan B. Anthony never saw women get the vote. Frederick Douglass never met the Reverend Dr. King. We don't have faith in things that are easy to see. We serve the ages because we believe a better world is worth working for. That's why we do it. So we just keep fighting. We just keep walking. We just keep hoping. We just keep breathing. And we work for a better world. And it doesn't matter what you believe about the resurrection. Pick your favorite. And Jesus isn't coming back. But Christ returns every time. In the human heart, you have the choice to choose love or the regressive alternative that is always rooted in fear, by the way.
Wow. I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter what you believe about the resurrection, and Jesus isn't coming back.
Nope. Yeah, that I gotta admit, that I think that qualifies as the worst Easter sermon I've ever heard in my life. I've never heard unbelief be more brazen. And here's the sad part. Is that he's got a mega church. You know, this is, Eastlake is not small by any stretch of the imagination. And many of the things he was saying, he was receiving applause from the people there on that Easter Sunday.
So, is this coming to an evangelical church near me?
Yes. In fact, if you want to talk to me privately, I could point you to at least one, potentially two in the St. Louis area that are already talking like this. So the answer is yeah. And the evangelicalism has been on this track for a while. And it was kind of Rob Bell and his Numa videos that really began to open the door up for evangelicalism to head in this way. And if you think about the book Love Wins that he wrote, you know, a while back now, that was all the rage in evangelicalism as at the time. So what we're hearing from Ryan Meeks and what I'm hearing from other pastors who are dabbling in this stuff is the same kind of postmodern liberal unbelief that Rob Bell espoused very early on. He was just too far ahead of everybody. But a lot of the younger leaders in the seeker-driven movement, they are following in his footsteps. And literally becoming openly hostile and quite vocal in their scoffing at the idea of the return of Christ, which is fascinating because Peter himself in 2 Peter chapter 3 talked about a time that would be coming when there would be those who would be scoffing at the idea of Jesus's return. And until this year, I hadn't really quite heard that. And this Ryan Meeks is like the first I've heard it from, but I've heard a few other guys talking in this way since then. So I'm hoping this doesn't become like the next fad, but I'll say this is that it's a weed that nobody is making any effort to pull up and get rid of. And within evangelicalism, there's like no theological or doctrinal stops at all in the movement anymore.
Pastor Chris Rosebrough is pastor of Consfinger Lutheran Church in Oslo, Minnesota, and host of the daily internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith. You can listen to Fighting for the Faith right after the live broadcast of Issues Etc. at 5 Central at piratechristian.com, piratechristian.com. Chris, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, Sharif Girgis is going to join us. We're going to be talking with him about Senator Cory Booker's question for Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo on his view of sex. Stay tuned. Is the Proverbs 31 woman primarily a prescription of how to become a better wife, mother, woman, or friend? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman at IssuesETC.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Lutheran Elementary School Association is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During April, if you open a federal FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the Lutheran Elementary School Association. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. lutheranfcu.org.